talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, get down. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Ghetto people,
what are you gonna do?
Tell me,
do you really think that the government cares about you?
No, they don't. Gonna turn to listen to me. I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people,
oh, yeah.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is.
Tell me, tell me.
I'm running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self respect.
Stop it,
ghetto
y'all.
People.
Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed will never come to be what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used.
People, what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that?
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to? Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself.
Living like you're living, caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
y'all. Talking to my people, yeah. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed will never come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you.
Ghetto
people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? With your life,
running like a rare disease,
running like a rare disease.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. I hope everything is well with you today. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to do the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, and must do, and I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, you had to do it anyways. I know you got it done, because this is how it goes. You know, a lot of things you can't not predict. And so you do it anyways. Had a good weekend. My good friend, Sister Ozara Day, was in town. She was performing. She performed at the Black Power Awards. Excuse me. And the Black Power Awards was the second annual, was a success. Unfortunately, they did have some technical problems with sound, which kind of messed up the flow of the program, but it was great. David Banner and Sister Williams were the host of the program. Saw some folks there that I truly respect and admire, of course. Ran into Anthony Browder. We'll definitely have Anthony Browder on this program next month. I would try my best to make that happen. He agreed that we would talk. And so next month, him and his daughter, because his daughter's, he's coming out with a new book as well as his daughter. So we definitely wanted to promote those things with Brother Anthony Browder. He's still doing work in Kemet, excavating and found all kinds of good stuff. So that will be part of our discussion. So I can't wait till that happens. Also talk to Renoko Rashidi to do a once a month program here on African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network on Time for an Awakening. So definitely going to make that happen. Chiki Akua, try to catch up with Chiki Akua, master teacher, Dr. Chiki Akua, and him and his lovely wife. And so I will be trying to touch base with him to try to get him on the program. I know that he's educating, so a lot of times some of the people I could get, I would not be able to get because of my time frame. I'm doing the day, and they're working. Good for them. So, really appreciate it. I was also a presenter. And I presented the Law and Justice Award to Alton Maddox. And, of course, he wasn't there. I shouldn't say of course, but he wasn't there. So I accepted the award on his behalf. And, you know, that's how they were rolling. So I don't know, you know, I wish we had the money to do. Now, I don't care about mimicking or parroting or looking like what Caucasians do, but I would like to have the money to have a program to truly recognize and honor. Because, see, the people that they recognize and honor on the Black Power Awards truly wouldn't be getting any other award, even by us. The NAACP Image Award, even the recent ones I saw on The Root. And I use The Root sometimes for TheRoot.com, and they had an award, The Root 100. And, you know, I don't, you know, with corporate sponsorship and stuff like that. And see, the Black Power Award takes none of that, as you heard, if you listened to the program last week when Brother DJ, who was organizing the Black Power Awards, was on promoting it. And the whole idea with the Black Power Awards is that we look at our community and we see those who are in our community who are doing things to better our community and for betterment of African people. And we see you and we appreciate you. Then we now will recognize you for the service that you have given, the things that you have done, going sometimes above and beyond. And so that's recognized, and it must be recognized. And so we appreciate what Brother DJ and his committee and all those who are involved with the Black Power Awards. And it was a good evening. Like I said, the only unfortunate thing was that the sound wasn't there. Also, too, the venue was different, and the venue they had last year, to me, was more conducive into what they wanted to do at the Black Power Awards as opposed to the ballroom of the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Atlanta. They didn't have the screens up there. They didn't see who the people who were being nominated, just gave the names, you know, and a little synopsis of, you know, who they were and what they've done, you know. So, you know, there's, you know, I'm quite sure as it evolves, and I pray that it will, and I'll definitely support it, that, you know, it gets better and better each year as it recognizes brothers and sisters who are doing things for our community and doing them not for the recognition or accolades or awards and so forth. They're doing it unconditionally because they know they have a contribution to make, and they know we need every bit of help that we can get. And so they're doing it. And they continue, and they will continue to do it. I know when those of us in ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, you know, when awards are given and accolades and praise are given, some salutations, whatever, they say the award for good work. This is Dr. Jacob Carruthers, Baba Jetty will say the reward for good work is more work. and for us, that's what it must be. You know, we've recognized you. We see you. We appreciate you for what you've done. And please continue to do more. And if you could take it up to another level, please do that. Because that's what our situation calls for. It ain't like, okay, man, thanks a lot for recognizing me. Appreciate it, man. This is what I did it for, man. I did it for this. But no, we do it for the love of our people and the conditions that we're in, to help our people understand the conditions that we're in so we can get out of it. You know? One thing that was said pretty much as a theme throughout the Black Power Awards, for the portion I was there, I wasn't there for some of the other activities, but it talked about, we're doing this for the children. A couple of other recipients, other war recipients, would say, I appreciate this, I'm accepting this on behalf of our future, of our children, and so forth. And of course, I love that, because that's what I believe, you know. But when we say our children are our future, we have to incorporate them into that future. We have to help them understand what that future should look like. And far as I am concerned, the future should look like African people doing for themselves. But yet, if we continue to push our children to just get a good job, go to school, this, that, and the other, and then go beg the system, which is, of course, dominated and controlled by Europeans, for a job, as opposed to helping them understand that it's not about the money, it's not about the cars, it's not about the material things, which, of course, this society promotes, which is very hard for us to explain to them what the direction should be for us. because they see that. That's why I'm always, that's why I've always been encouraged to see our youth who are engaged in an African-centered mindset, who are, you know, into natural hair, you know, and sometimes, yes, I agree. I wish brothers and sisters, but hey, it's our hair. And now we've come to a point where we're just going to let it grow. You know, we're just going to let it grow. They'll keep it clean and ain't even going to comb it. We're just going to let it fly out there. Well, you know, I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm not saying I do like it. I'm indifferent about it. Because only thing I care about is not what's on your head. It's what's in your head. It's what's in your mind. That's my main concern. It's not that you wear dashikis or grand boobas or galeys or lakey be whatever. It's not any of that. What it is how do you think? And even more important, how do you act? How do you behave? What do you do to help our people? What do you do to help our cause for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for our people? That's the bottom line. And so to me, the educational process, and if you're saying this is for our children, we need to develop ways so our children can understand that. So our children can understand that they are being educated to be liberated. They are being educated to be sovereign. They are being educated to run their own affairs. They're not looking to anybody outside of who we are. They're being educated to make the transition from a society that is corrupt, capitalistic, materialistic, individualistic and evil to a society where a lot of hard work will be have to be done to make it into a society where there is justice, where there's a collective understanding of the good for all of us, where we control the resources that are under our feet, where we grow food to feed the continent. This is the education that we should be giving our children. And so if it is for our future, and as you can see here in America, our numbers are not growing because we're imprisoned. We're mass incarcerated. We're targeted. We're targeted for sterilization. At one time, we were 17%. Now they say we're 13. I don't know what the numbers are, and really, I don't care. I don't care. What I care about is that African people wake up and begin to come together, pull together, pull their resources, us lifting us. That's why I keep promoting us lifting us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics. But I also like the other principles of the Kwanzaa season or the Nguza Saba. The number one, of course, is umoja, unity, functional unity, without conformity, unity in purpose, unity. Everybody, you see these sayings all the time. If you want to end what this cracker has done to us, unify. We should get t-shirts out there, unify or die. Unify or die. Kujichagulia, self-determination. That's contained in what we say here at African Perspectives. Independence. Self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's what we discuss here. Because as far as this program is concerned, there is no other discussion. And everything is done from that perspective. Ujima, collective work and responsibility. We must learn to work together. It should be done in the home initially, because if you remember when Kwanzaa was started, basically Kwanzaa was not a public celebration. It was a family celebration. Collective work and responsibility, working with each other within our family. Now it's within our community and our world. Collective work and responsibility. That we work together. And whatever the assigned task is, you do it. And you do it within the prescribed amount of time that it is supposed to be done. With no procrastination. I was going to say no lethargy, which of course is laziness. Don't be lazy. And then of course, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, spending money with one another, supporting one another. People have come to this country from India, from Pakistan, from Iran, from Korea, and other parts, and established businesses in our community, across this country, wherever there's a so-called inner city, a so-called urban district, a so-called ghetto or black section. The people who have businesses there are not us. I've been blessed to go to many cities, and these are the things that I look at and look for. What's happening in our community? What's going on? And the same thing happens whether we're here in Atlanta, Milwaukee, Dallas, LA, Hartford, whatever, wherever. And it must change. Nia, purpose. Our purpose as a people is to break the shackles, to release the vice grip that this Caucasian have put on our minds. That is our purpose. Because once it has been released from our minds, we can help others so it can be released from their minds. We can help them turn that knob at the end of the handle so they can think clearly, have vision, so they can step outside of those imposed boundaries that Caucasians have placed us in. So we look at this for what it is. You know, when you hear Caucasians, and that's in general, love this country, stand up for this country, hail it, praise it, best country in the world, greatest country in the history of humanity. I don't think Caucasians could ever create something for the benefit of all humanity. It is not in their DNA. It is not how they developed as human beings. So it's impossible for them to do that. It's impossible for the Caucasians to have the moral. I don't even want to use no damn big ass words like treptitude and all that. They can't stand on a moral ground on nothing. They're bankrupt. They have no morale. They are amoral. Kumba. So that's our purpose, Nia. But we're on Kumba, creativity. And not just the creativity of us as entertainers. The basketball, football, baseball, whatever sport it is. The theater, movies, music, whatever that is in entertainment. Yes, we are beautiful. We are great. And it shows, just as many of our scholar said, that whatever realm we apply ourselves to, whatever realm we apply ourselves to and give great attention to and give great focus to, we exceed. And we excel, but more importantly, we exceed anybody. Imagine if there was no discrimination, that you in your ability could do what you feel truly, as they, you know, erroneously say that you can be anything and do anything you want. No, you can't. But imagine if there were no restrictions and you and your ability could take you wherever you wanted to go. And we could do that because we have the ability to do that. But not here, because we are restricted. There are still occupations, still areas in this society that we're non-existent in them. Our numbers are pathetically 0.0 whatever. Or it's just token. A few here and there. And even because of how we've been trained, there's even some of us who like that. They like that dynamic. They like that ratio. Where they might live, where they've gone to school, and where they worked. Because of how deeply we've been conditioned, how deeply we've been trained. Imani, faith. Faith not just in, let me go back to Kumba creativity, because I want to be sure that I state this. Because in the creative process, yes, I understand what we are allowed to do, but in the total creative process, you could see African genius. My friend, bless her soul, Sister Salah Shabazz, Lady Salah, miss her. She was the curator of the Black Inventions Museum. And in fact, me and her went to Ghana. It's my second trip to Ghana to have the museum displayed throughout Ghana, in Accra, in Kumasi, a few other places. We had the museum displayed, and many of the people were just astonished to realize what we have done. Even some of the Ghanaian inventors, they didn't know. That's our problem. Our people, we don't know. We don't. That's why, to me, what's most important for us at this stage of the game is the information and the right information. The right information, the liberating information. The information that gets you to think, to make you want to research, that'll make you go to your computer, that'll make you pull out a book. We are a beautiful and tremendous people, but our future is not planned. And believe me, dear brothers and sisters, those who are in control have no desire to compete with us. And so therefore, not in this society that they have created. Oh, no, we'll never be able to compete on equal footing in this place. And so therefore, it's incumbent upon us with our creativity to go home and create for us and our people and for African people globally to be a world player. Imani, faith, not just a faith in God and entities unseen, but also a faith in us, in our belief that we can overcome whatever obstacle, roadblocks, or detours are put in our path. That we have faith in ourselves and faith in each other. To be honest, to be forthright. Faith. Yes, I believe in God. No, I'm not a Christian. No, I'm not a Muslim. But I believe in an entity higher than ourselves. But also I believe that if things are going to be done, you just can't pray. you got to do. And the more you do, the more you become inspired, the more things open up for you, the more vision you have, the more clarity you have. We have to do. I'll be talking more about incorporating the seven principles and incorporating Ma'at into our lives, the seven virtues of Ma'at, and of course the five C's into our lives, all of those things in weeks to come. But I'm hoping that, I'm hoping, and I'm always going to hope and pray, that our eyes will open someday. And it better be soon. It better be soon. Because tomorrow is not promised. We must do it now. Just like Dr. Clark says, everything I'm talking about sounds like tomorrow's work. And the best time to begin tomorrow's work, today. At this very moment, it's today. And considering how demented and evil-spirited that those who are in control are, we have to begin today. Because tomorrow we might be gone. And that's real. But yet, you know, when I watch these programs, you know, and I watch TV1 every morning, every Monday through Friday for those 2 hours that it's on, because, you know, even though it's TV1 and it's Roland Martin and it's the news from, you know, as he likes to say, from a black perspective. And you know what it is? It's a black perspective. It's not an African perspective, you know, because when he was talking about Mugabe, and I'm going to talk about Mugabe in a minute, it was as if that's over there. That's their problem. You know, that's how he made it seem to me. You know, and then he had on a retired general with AFRICOM, which of course is they're on every America has military presence globally. Of the 54 countries, I think only one country, and that's Zimbabwe. They did not have military. They got it everywhere. There are American soldiers, American bases, American influence globally. America, United States of America, is the military arm. It is the bastion of European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege in the world. It maintains and sustains itself through the ability to kill you, America. And we hail America. We raise flags. Even when we protest, we're made to feel that we should be ashamed to even protest America while America does what it does. And yet we don't call America out on nothing. Our legislators do nothing. That's why I'm saying to us, brothers and sisters, we are in a pathetic situation. Our clergy are still talking about nothing. We really have no international business. We got businesses, but we don't have nothing of any substance that hires and employs a good number of our people. And if it's in one area, it should be in other cities as well. But it is not. We are in a very tenuous position. We have to wake up out of this malaise. We have to wake up out of this sleep that we are in. Brothers and sisters, as you know, Zimbabwe, there's been a coup, and President Robert Mugabe and his party, ZANU-PF, which was the political party that helped overthrow Ian Smith and the British. It just sickens me when I see the so-called queen, you know, supposedly there was a big anniversary. Her and old dude have been together for 70 years. They look like 140. But it sickens me, the whole family, the whole British thing. And there are some of our people, because we have been trained so well, we love Great Britain. We love Britain. We love the United Kingdom. The British were the biggest enslavers of our people. The British were the biggest imperialists on the continent. The British owe the world restitution so much that when I seen that picture of the so-called queen sitting amidst all those bars of gold, there's not one damn gold mine in England. Where'd they get all that gold from? Yes, you're right. It is ours. So, Brother Mugabe, and I wish that we as African people could just release this vice grip and come together and sit at a table and iron out whatever petty differences that we may have, so we can move an agenda that will liberate and give African people self-determination, but more importantly, sovereignty. That means that everything that is done, we do. We don't ask anybody for permission. We don't ask anybody for any help outside of us. We do it within ourselves. We manage our resources. We manage our land. We can never do it here. What we do here is what you see. Many of us who hate us so badly because of how we behave, because maybe they have a better position than the brothers and sisters who are scuffling and so forth. They don't understand that this system, this very system, which has somehow, they feel they're fortunate, they're blessed. They grew up in a nice family that got out of so-called ghettos in the 50s and 60s, particularly the 60s, because it is the 60s that many of our people started to be able to get out. I love the 60s, but I have to understand that too, that open housing marching, civil rights legislation, open housing legislation, all of these things, all the other discriminatory things that were supposedly broke those things down, allowed those of us who had abilities and wherewithal and college degrees and other expertise to leave the American African community and then go to the Caucasian community and be the first. I'm the first one on the block. My daughter she's the first one there at her school. I have a great job. I have a beautiful car, beautiful wife, da 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 da. I got mine. And so if you didn't get yours, yes, right, it's your fault. You don't put the blame where it squarely belongs on this system that is inherently discriminatory, racist to its core, and allows individuals, because believe me, some of them, okay, you can argue that some people just cannot be stopped because of how prepared they are and how committed they are to achieving whatever particular goals. I'm not going to argue that. I'd be a fool to argue that. What an individual can do. If an individual puts their mind to it, I would never argue against that. That's ludicrous. There are people coming from other parts of the world that come to America because America speaks to the will of the individual. So people risk shark-infested waters, put their life savings into a lottery to be able to come here to this country to seek their fortune. And some succeed. Whatever that measurement that they say is successful, you know, money, position, job, car, home, whatever. I can't argue against that. But what I argue is, why are we, as African people, somebody, I don't know who what group it was, mentioned some group that are doing well, and you know they got a good situation going on, and they're doing well. And this is something that is this Caucasian person from Homeland Security talked about. And he says, "But look at blacks who are in the ghettos, who are messing up the community because of drugs and promiscuous sex and so forth." When he said that, I saw somebody show something where a group of us, young people, it was so disgusting. It made me, everybody humping on each other, young sisters on the ground, twerking, dudes, sisters consistently backing it up. I was appalled. Young people, I'm talking about teenagers. Some even probably look even younger. These ain't grown folks. But it's just like that in the Caribbean. I saw a group of young people imitating what they see their parents or adults do. Just like here, we do it. The thing is this. Who is in control? I recognize that this society would love to keep the decadence, the ignorance, all of that in the forefront. And then praise an individual who has stepped outside of that. See, you can do it too. You know, you can't, but give you the illusion of inclusion. A perception that is not based upon reality. That yes, we as African people. Because I know I got a good friend. He's always blaming us. Even when I try to help him understand, he'll eventually still blame us. Because we've been conditioned to blame ourselves for this wretched, ugly condition. We've been conditioned to do that. So I'm hoping that we see this before. I mean that our eyes are open. That our eyes are open. Our heart is open because of our minds are clear. Our vision, that we understand the direction that we as African people must go in. So I'm hoping that that's what's going to take place. That's what's going to happen. We're going to talk about Zimbabwe when we come back from the break. What's going on in Zimbabwe? So, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk Radio Network.com. Please stay with us. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832 to join the conversation. We're going to be right back, brothers and sisters.
I asked a group of youth a simple question. Tell me about your history. Many of the youth spoke about the Civil Rights era with Dr. Martin Luther King. And an overwhelmingly majority spoke about slavery.
What you call black history, what you call African history, are the missing pages of world history. Now, because I've now begun to study European history, I began to understand how African history was misplaced in the history of the world. And the one thing that I learned repeatedly, you cannot oppress a historical people. And once a people understand the nature of their role in history, they will not permit themselves to be oppressed. In order to oppress you, people must remove you from the respectful commentary of history. They must destroy your confidence and historical memory. The memory of what you was, so that you can be confused about what you are and more confused about what you still must be and where you still must go.
The dangers of knowing your history only from slavery? When you feel like your history started from slavery, which was beyond words, you'll compare it to the disenfranchisement that our race continues to see today. You will subconsciously say to yourself, "Psh, I know it's not good, but heck, compared to slavery, we're good." You'll become socialized and take disenfranchisement as being your norm. Don't believe me? It has happened and occurred in every single decade and every century since colonialism began. Heck, Harriet Tubman was the one who told us, "I could have freed hundreds of more slaves if only they knew that they were slaves." But see, there are some questions that you need to ask, like, how was our civilization prior to European invaders? I mean, were we truly savages that were in need of being civilized? It's only when you understand the greatness of your civilization prior to European colonialism that things will become crystal clear. Understand the civilization that you come from, the civilization that was interrupted, will you understand what your ancestors and the great warriors of your race fought for in America, Africa, South America, the Caribbeans, all throughout the African diaspora. And for that reason, I'm going to introduce you to one of my favorite history teachers, Home Team History, another YouTuber with a wonderful channel that focuses mainly on pre-colonial history. Home Team, tell me why you think it's important for us to know pre-colonial history.
What up, African world? It's your boy, Home Team, here. You know what? The great Griot makes an excellent point. We as Afro-descendant people have been told on numerous occasions that we come from a dark continent with a dark history. And anything that we've ever achieved has been supervised or accompanied by other people. Now, the crime was not us being told this. The crime was actually us believing it. Many of us even avoid association with Africa because of these fallacies promoted by other people. And so many of us actually believe our history begins with slavery and ends with Martin Luther King. In a way, we've become conditioned to not believe in our own agency as Afro-descendant people. And because we don't believe in our own agency, we champion the goods and services of other people and even accommodate their needs and their concerns above our own, willingly surrendering our dignity and pieces of our humanity for approval or validation. because apparently we can't even imagine our own advancement without them. This is why on my channel, I highlight and discuss the agency of African people that's been exhibited not only on the African continent, but the world. African empires, mythology, and especially African kings and queens. I explain things from a proper historical perspective, and it's important that we as Afro-descended people value what we create and value our own history. Hope you guys can continue to support our platform and what we stand for, the Great Griot and Home Team History.
Part of being able to make a people inferior in their own mind is to strip them of who they are. Hiding history was a tactic used by colonizers to Africans, Native Americans, even those we refer to as Hispanics. So I need for you to check out Home Team History. I want you to gather and grasp what great people you come from, the greatness of who they were, the great civilizations that they built. Because next, we're going to go back and look at some major events after colonialism. Some events that can help explain what we see today. And not from a European perspective, but from your perspective.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can listen to us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. You can't listen live. You can go to the archive and pull down previous recorded programs. We're here every Monday and Wednesday and Friday. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC. That's your host, Sister POC, Revive, Proof of Consciousness. Every Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, Revive, every Wednesday on Time for an Awakening. Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, what we like to call it, Family Economics, with Brother DJ, Baba Kambizi, Baba Kima, Sister Shay, Sister Nana, Baba Thurman, and all the other brothers and sisters of ULU, Madike, Brother Madike out there in Scotland. He's from Senegal, but he's back and forth. Brother does great work. So, Us Lifting Us, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Thursday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. And then on Friday, after my program, on Friday, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right. That's what time it is. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., Time for an Awakening. On Saturday, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. Later that afternoon, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then on Sundays, Revive. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening from 7 p.m. to about 10. Once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. It's Time for an Awakening. Those are some of the programs, because there are going to be more programs that are going to be on the Time for an Awakening stream. Happy to be on it. I'm hoping that you're enjoying it. Hope you enjoy the sound quality. I know that it's better. And so please join us. Phone number to call. You can listen to just, if you want to listen, just download the radio app, TuneIn.com. TuneIn. Download the radio app, TuneIn. Tell your friends to do it. Once they've downloaded the app, put the search in for Time for an Awakening. Put search in for Time for an Awakening. And if it's Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, and if it's 11 a.m., go to Time for an Awakening on your TuneIn app, on your phone, or any other mobile device you may have on your computer, and you can listen to African Perspectives with me. And you can listen to any other program because it streams 24/7. You can listen to previous recorded programs with Brother Elliot. Yesterday he had on the Minister for Wellness. And you need to go online or go Google the Minister of Wellness. Brother Jordan. Outstanding information. I'm looking at this brother has the brother who stepped into the shoes of Dr. Sabi. To cure our people and to cure our people holistically. You know, I believe that when Dr. Sabi returned from the U.S. and he had all this money, he had plenty of money, and they confiscated the money, they imprisoned him, and he died, and I believe that they killed him. I believe he was marked for death when he won that Supreme Court case proving that he could cure AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. understanding what happens to us as human beings biologically. And I'm saying that Brother Jordan is in that mode. He truly wants to help with the diet and the overall health of our people. Because in this battle for our self-determination, in this battle for our independence, in this battle for our liberation, in this battle for sovereignty, we must be a whole people. This, brothers and sisters, is not a sprint. It is a marathon. But any race that you run, you must be in shape. And so therefore, even myself, as old as I is, trying to get in shape to, because it's a protracted struggle for us. It is not going to happen overnight. We didn't get in this situation overnight, and we sure the hell ain't going to get out of it overnight unless there truly is some true divine intervention. And I know that many of us wait on our butts for divine intervention as opposed to making it happen. God helps those who help themselves. God bless the child whose God is on. So, those are the programs, and I hope that you can listen. I hope that you'll be able to listen to this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and all the other ones that I announced, because that's what time it is. We're going to talk about what happened in Zimbabwe. And Brother Robert Mugabe's speech to the nation. In fact, let me see if I can get this to work, and you will hear him. You will hear him, and what he says, he gives no indications, no feeling that, yes, I'm stepping down, I'm resigning. And what I really want to say about that is that, to me, we should develop a cadre of leadership. No one individual should be ruler, president, or whatever title that is for life. But the leadership should be developed. And a succession plan should be in place at all times. In fact, the cadre of leadership will prevent any leader from being knocked off and then that movement being delayed or even die because the leader is gone. It is not a charismatic leader or even a dictator or whatever. It is the program. It is the program for the benefit of African people. The 20th century program for African people. And so if there is a challenger, if there is a death, or if there's an assassination, whatever, how it happens, we turn the page. And we continue to move forward for the benefit of our people. We turn the page. So let me see if I can get this piece to working here so you can hear Robert Mugabe at a press conference he had, I believe it was yesterday. So this is very, very, very recent.
As I conclude this address, I am aware that many developments have occurred in the party or have been championed and done by individuals in the name of the party. Given the failings of the past and the anger these might have triggered in some quarters, such developments are quite understandable. However, we cannot be guided by bitterness or vengefulness, both of which would not make us any better party members or any better Zimbabweans. Our hallowed policy of reconciliation, which we pronounced in 1980, and through which we reached out to those who had occupied and oppressed us for nearly a century, and those we had traded fire with in a bitter war, surely cannot be unavailable to our own, both in the party and in our nation.
That was the words of Robert Mugabe. And we understand the situation. He's 92 years old? He wanted to give the leadership over to his wife. She's 50-something years old, early 50s, I believe. And people were upset with that idea, and really, so am I. I believe that what should happen is that you prepare new leadership. You prepare somebody young. I ain't talking about in their 20s, 30s. Somebody who is, to me, if you're 97 years old, somebody young might be 60. But no, in their 40s. Who have been groomed, educated, and firmly planted and rooted in the knowledge of self and the direction that our people need to go, who have the heart for our people, who will not be swayed, who will not do stuff under the table or behind closed doors, who truly will not sabotage anything and work with our enemies. That's our challenge, isn't it? Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe defied calls to quit Sunday, saying he will preside over a ruling party Congress in December in an announcement that could trigger impeachment proceedings this week and more protests demanding his ouster. In televised address to 93, and you heard part of that address, that was just part of it, the 93-year-old Mugabe acknowledged what he said were a whole range of concerns of Zimbabweans about the chaotic state of the government and the economy. But he stopped short of what many people in the Southern African nation were hoping for, a statement that he was resigning after nearly four decades in power. The once formidable Mugabe is now virtually a powerless, isolated figure, making his continued incumbency all the more unusual and extenuating Zimbabwe's political limbo. He is largely confined to his private home by the military. The ruling party has fired him from his leadership post, and huge crowds poured into the streets of Harare, the capital, on Saturday to demand that he leave office. Yet the president sought to project authority in his speech, which he delivered after shaking hands with security force commanders, one of whom leant over a couple of times to help Mugabe find his place on a page that he was reading. The Central Committee of the ruling ZANU-PF party voted to dismiss Mugabe as leader at a meeting early Sunday and said impeachment proceedings would begin if he does not resign by noon Monday. Mugabe made no reference to the party moves against him, instead saying he would play a leading role in party Congress plan for December 12th through the 17th. The Congress is due in a few weeks from now, Mugabe said. I will preside over its process, which must not be presupposed by any acts of calculated to undermine it or to compromise the outcomes in the eyes of the public. Mugabe has discussed his possible resignation on two occasions with military commanders after they effectively took over the country on Tuesday. The commanders were troubled by the firing of his longtime deputy and the positioning of unpopular First Lady Grace Mugabe to succeed him. He referred to the military's concern about the state of Zimbabwe where the economy has deteriorated amid factional battles within the ruling party. Whatever the pros and cons of the ways that went about registering these concerns, I, as the president of Zimbabwe, as the commander-in-chief, do acknowledge the issues they have drawn my attention to and do believe that these were raised in the spirit of honesty and out of deep and patriotic concern for the stability of our nation and for the welfare of our people, Mugabe said. I read that again. Whatever the pros and cons of the ways that they want about, the ways that they went about registering these concerns, I, as the president of Zimbabwe, as the commander-in-chief, do acknowledge the issues that have been drawn to my attention and do believe that these were raised in the spirit of honesty and out of deep and patriotic concerns for the stability of our nation and for the welfare of our people. Whoever wrote it, I hope he truly understands it and what his duty should be. The deputy whom Mugabe fired, former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, is positioned to become Zimbabwe's next leader after the party committee made him its nominee to take over for Mugabe, who has ruled since independence from Caucasians in 1980. Committee members stood, cheered, and sung after Mugabe was removed from his post as party leader. Meeting chair Umpofu referred to him as outgoing president and called it a sad day for Mugabe after his decades in power. He has been our leader for a long time, and we will all have learned a great deal from him, Mpufe said. But Mugabe, he said, surrounded himself with a wicked cabinet. The meeting replaced Mugabe as party chief, Winnemugwe, and recalled the First Lady as the head of the Women's League. In decisions set forth to be ratified at the Party Congress next month, the committee accused the First Lady of preaching hate, divisiveness, and assuming roles and powers not delegated to the office. Zimbabwean officials never revealed details of Mugabe's talk with the military, but the military agreed to favor a voluntary resignation to maintain a veneer of legality in the political transition. Mugabe, in return, has likely used whatever leverage he has left to try to preserve his legacy or even protect himself and his family from possible prosecution. Hours before Mugabe spoke to television, a head of state of the country's Liberation War veterans said more protests could occur if the president does not step aside. He said he was concerned that the military would end up opening fire to protect Mugabe from protest. We would expect that Mugabe would not have the protection of the military shooting at people trying to defend him. And that is his choice if he chooses to. But we will remove him. The lion. The old lion. The old lion. And of course, the United States. U.S. calls for return to civilian government in Zimbabwe. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called Friday to return to civilian rule in Zimbabwe, saying the country has a chance to put itself on a new path amid signs of longtime authoritarian President Robert Mugabe being forced from power in a bloodless coup d'etat. We shall work together for a quick return to civilian rule in that country in accordance with their constitution, Tillerson told a gathering of African foreign ministers and diplomats at the State Department. He said it is imperative that Zimbabwe hold free and fair elections. Mugabe has won previous elections that have been found by observers to have been deeply flawed. And no, let me finish reading this article and then I'll comment. Let me do that. Because the United States has the gall, the mitigated gall to tell anybody about free and partial elections. They have rigged elections. They have killed leaders. The United States has no
moral authority whatsoever. Zimbabwe has an opportunity to set itself on a new path, one that must include democratic elections and respect for human rights, Tillerson said. Ultimately, the people of Zimbabwe must choose their government. In our conversation today, we have an opportunity to discuss concrete ways that we can help them through this transition. His comments came as the 93-year-old Mugabe made his first public appearance since the military put him under house arrest earlier in that week. The military has announced significant progress on talks for his departure and arrest from his allies. Branches of his ruling party, meanwhile, began to press on confident votes, to pass a no-confident vote in the world's oldest head of state, who has been in office for 37 years. Despite his arrest, Zimbabwe's military took pains to show respect for the 93-year-old leader by referring to him as president and commander-in-chief. The Trump administration has taken a largely hands-off approach to Zimbabwe, in contrast to the three previous U.S. administrations of Clinton, Bush, and Obama. All three actively sought to isolate Mugabe and his ruling clique for increasing human rights abuses, hoping to encourage a democratic transition. Since Trump moved into the White House in January, however, Washington has been virtually silent on the matter. Tillerson's comments on Friday appear to be only the second time he has mentioned the country in a public setting. The first was a three-sentence written statement released by the State Department on the anniversary of Zimbabwe's independence in April. All five of his immediate predecessors had Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton, and John Kerry delivered speeches in which they denounced Mugabe's consolidation of power through violent suppression of dissented voices or other human rights violations and the controversial seizures of Caucasian-owned land. UN envoy Nikki Haley mentioned Zimbabwe and Mugabe in a June speech, but her critique was focused excoriating the UN Human Rights Council for failing to address despotic regimes in general. Despots. America has no right at all trying to